Welcome to Why So Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. On today's program, Ron Kaplan fills us in on what this year's Film Festival of Aviation has in store. It's a big year for them. Community Voices producer Basim Blunt will tell us about a conference taking place aimed at lowering gun violence. And producer Steve Siff recaps his visit last month to the Dayton Dragons National Anthem Sing-Off. Up first, this week's news. Connecticut lawmakers passed one of the toughest gun laws in the nation 4 months after the Newtown shootings. It included an assault weapons ban, expanded background checks, and limits the size of gun magazines. Emily McCord spoke to Ohio Public Radio's Joe Ingles about where Ohio stands on the gun debate.
Is this a debate that we're even having here in Ohio?
Not really, Emily. Right now in Ohio, we have a lot of big issues on the table. For example, the huge state budget, a lot of debate over that, a lot of hearings over that. And it seems to be the focus that lawmakers have right now, getting that budget passed. And this gun debate, while it's happening nationally, and we hear, some plans of ideas that lawmakers have for, guns and dealing with guns in the future. But it's not really something that the lawmakers are focusing on now, and it's not something that we're seeing legislation on now.
How does Ohio current law stand?
We've passed a lot of things in the last few years that have been favorable to gun owners. For example, just last year, there was a legislation that was passed that allowed gun owners that have concealed carry permits to carry those, have those in their cars in the parking garage here at the State House. That was huge because usually the State House is completely exempted from gun laws. You know, they make gun laws and say, oh, you can carry them, but not in the State House. So to allow guns in the State House parking garage, that was a pretty big piece of legislation. But we've also had, our concealed carry laws, relatively new. And we've allowed guns in bars now where they weren't allowed before. That was just in the past couple of years. We've already expanded gun rights laws in this state in the past few years. And some other states are not as friendly to gun owners as Ohio is. So as far as cracking down on guns in Ohio, that's probably not likely to happen. We have a Republican legislature, both the House and the Senate, and most of the folks who are in there right now like the idea of allowing law-abiding citizens to carry guns.
There are Ohioans that are urging some action from lawmakers about this issue. What's happening there at the State House?
Well, we've seen this week, especially the mayors throughout the United States they're waging a campaign. And you might see the ad on TV in some parts of Ohio. Mayor Bloomberg in New York City is putting millions of dollars in this effort. And there are ads that say, you know what, we like our Second Amendment rights. We agree that we should carry guns, but we want restrictions like background checks to make sure that people who are who have committed domestic violence or people who have mental health issues, that they cannot get those guns and use them. They're trying to get people to weigh in on that federal legislation that's coming down the pike here because they want to at least get the part of the bill passed that would do background checks. You know, if there's enough support for those kind of things from the public, the thought is that, maybe these lawmakers will say, hey, let's go ahead and put that back in there.
Do we know where Ohioans stand on the issue of gun control right now?
Well, we really haven't had a lot of polls on it. We've had one, and one that sticks out in my mind. Maybe there's more. But the one that we've had shows that Ohioans, they like the idea of the background checks. That's polling very well. But as far as, cracking down on guns further, we're not seeing a huge amount of support for going into the more rigid kind of controls on guns.
Are we going to see any of this outside money having any real impact here in Ohio, or is that more just a campaign for the national scene?
Well, it's mostly a campaign for the national scene. And, Ohioans tend to be, we are one of those states that, people listen to Ohioans. We're a bellwether state, and A lot of politicians, if they see Ohioans being very strong for or against something, it does play in their mind. So they're hoping that, you know, the people who are putting those ads on TV are hoping that Ohioans will be on the phone with Senators Brown and Portman and with their representative in Congress and say, hey, we want this legislation passed. That's what they're hoping for. But right now at the State House, we're not seeing a tremendous push for cracking down on guns. And like I said, if anything, we've seen it go the other way in the past couple of years.
I've been speaking with Joe Ingles from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
Clark County commissioners have agreed to hire two deputies to provide extra security for county schools. WISO's Wayne Baker reports the plan is part of an ongoing effort to make schools safer without having to arm teachers.
The NRA's national effort to arm teachers in public and private schools after the tragic Newtown, Connecticut shootings received support from Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine, who supported Police Academy firearms training for school administrators, staff, and teachers. But in Clark County, city and rural school superintendents say they prefer to have a safety plan that would add trained police officers in the schools instead of armed teachers. The commissioners recently approved a plan to hire two deputies that will not only patrol school grounds, but will help develop and review security plans. Springfield City School Superintendent Dr. David Estrop says he likes the idea.
We would prefer to have police officers who not only are licensed to carry the weapon, but have been trained to carry lethal weapons under stressful situations. That would be our preference.
The program will allow the two deputies to split time in all of the county schools during the school year and provide security training to teachers and staff. Springfield City Schools already have resource officers in place. Commissioners say it will cost $96,000 in the first year and $118,000 the following year to hire deputies for the program, which is scheduled to start in June. For WISO, I'm Wayne Baker reporting.
This week, 39 years ago, April 3rd, 1974, a super outbreak of storms produced 148 tornadoes within a 24-hour period. It's reported that during the height of activity, 15 tornadoes were on the ground simultaneously. Nationwide, 315 people were killed and well over 5,000 were injured in 13 states and Canada in which tornadoes were produced. The tornado that struck Xenia, heard here in this audio, was an F5 with a path of destruction over 32 miles long. It touched down at 4:30 p.m., 9 miles southwest of Xenia, and entered the city about 10 minutes later. More than 1,400 buildings, including 1,200 homes, 300 in the Arrowhead subdivision, were damaged or completely destroyed. 9 churches and most of the city's schools were hit. Luckily, the storm struck about an hour after classes had been dismissed. A train passing through the city was also caught by the tornado. 7 of its cars were blown over, blocking Main Street. About half the city was destroyed. 39 years later, the 1974 Xenia tornado still ranks as one of the nation's largest natural disasters. Following President Barack Obama's designation of 5 new national monuments last week, Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar has been on a 5-state tour of those sites. His stop this week, the Charles Young Buffalo Soldiers National Monument in Wilberforce. Local and national parks officials gathered with Secretary Salazar for a tour of Colonel Young House on Route 42 and the dedication ceremony that followed at the National Afro-American Museum at Central State University. This is the final tour of duty for Secretary Salazar, who will leave his post after his Ohio visit. He says the national parks should reflect the lives of all U.S. citizens.
In making sure that we are bringing places like Colonel Young and the Buffalo Soldiers onto the map is a part of making our parks relevant to all of America with no exceptions. And so this is a milestone in that regard.
Colonel Young was the 3rd African-American to graduate from West Point and the 1st to achieve the rank of colonel. Renata Young, the great-grandniece of Colonel Young, says those accomplishments were especially significant in light of racial barriers in place during his lifetime.
For a black officer to manage white troops was controversial. That was a major roadblock. For in the military to have troops that do not recognize the skills or management of their commanding officer would place the troops and the officer and the country at risk.
Secretary Salazar also noted that the five new national monuments will serve as economic engines for their local communities through increased tourism and outdoor recreation. The National Park Service says national parks generated $30.1 billion in economic activity and supported 252,000 jobs nationwide in 2011. This is WISO Weekend on WYSO. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. The Dayton Dragons opened their 14th season on Thursday, and this year, an 11-year-old girl from Loveland sang the national anthem in front of a sold-out crowd. Her name is Olivia Leffler, and she was one of about 300 people who auditioned for the chance. Open auditions were held last month at the Dayton and Fairfield Malls. Community Voices producer Steve Siff was there.
All right, next up we have Dory Ayers. Come on up, Dory.
Snow swirled outside as dozens of vocalists and instrumentalists waited a turn to audition the national anthem at a temporary stage on the lower concourse of the Fairfield Mall. Their excitement and reverence sang volumes about Dayton's attitude toward its dragons.
I love them.
That's Ellie, age 8, after singing her rendition of the Star Spangled Banner for the judges.
It's my dad's favorite team, and once I got used to it, I kind of liked them too.
For everyone involved, the stakes were large. The chance to take part in a hallowed civic ritual, and to show off personal pizzazz on what seems like Dayton's own big league stage. Here's a high school show choir, the Greenview Sensations. Tom Berry, who has sung the national anthem at a home game for the Cincinnati Reds, said he has auditioned every year to sing for the Dragons.
I think it's basically the honor and dignity and respect of the song and what it stands for our country, and I just enjoy doing it.
Ten-year-old Garrett Wyatt of Springfield wore a tuxedo to his tryout.
I did it because I really want to become a professional singer and make my dreams come true.
Garrett rated his performance as a 6 or 7 on a 10-point scale. But even Tom Berry, who has been through these auditions 14 times, confessed to a case of nerves.
I still get butterflies. When I don't get butterflies anymore, I won't do it anymore.
For Community Voices, this is Stephen Sitt. It's reporting by Chris Cullum and Kathleen Sullivan.
Hip-hop music pioneer MC Lyte will be in Dayton this week to perform and to speak to area youth as part of the Speak, Be Heard, Be Considered conference. The three-day event will bring the Dayton hip-hop community together with local law enforcement and civic leaders to address issues that can reduce gun violence in the city. Erica Fields from the City of Dayton Human Relations Council and Bryce Hudson of Wright State's Bowling Center stopped by the WYSO studios to discuss the upcoming activities with Community Voices producer Basim Blunt.
Hi.
Hello, how
Thanks
are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited about this series of events that we have coming up. It's called
Dear Dr. Hip Hop, Speak, Be Heard, Be Considered.
Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about the concept and how
Sure.
this whole thing got started?
Well, the City of Dayton Human Relations Council we administer several community relations projects, two of which are the Community Initiative to Reduce Gun Violence, SIR, and the Community Police Relations. We are partnering actually with Wright State University with their Dear Dr. Hip Hop initiative.
Our involvement is an ongoing commitment we have with the Dayton community, bringing the academic component to higher education as well as the community and hip hop in a way in which we can utilize the culture. And when you look at the hip hop culture, how it started with youth. Mm-hmm. And we know that the youth really is the key to a lot of our solutions. It's also the key in finding out what it is that we need to do in order to make our community a lot better. This year, we knew some time ago that we wanted to bring in a female MC, and MC Light was number one on our list.
So let's look at the events that you guys are having. Mm-hmm. On Thursday, this Thursday, April 11th, there's going to be a kickoff rally. Tell us about that. Yeah.
Thursday, April 11th at Omega Baptist Church. Doors open at 6 p.m. And it's really an opportunity for the community to come out, get engaged, hear about what's going on, hear about the programs and how they can get involved. And we're doing a spaghetti chili cook-off, which we encourage people to come out and have some free food and help us with our cause. You know, gun violence affects everybody, mothers, fathers, neighbors, you know, residents, business owners. And so, you know, this is our community, and this really gives the community a chance to speak out, to be heard, and to have their voice heard and considered.
So the old school tribute concert, Stop the Violence, is Friday.
Friday, April 12th. Doors open at 8:30 p.m. at Thurgood Marshall High School.
As far as Friday night is concerned, it's all old school. We're asking everyone to come out. If your mama, your grandma, whoever, you know, grandfather, whoever it is, get your Kangol hats, your Gazelles, your fat lace shoes, the whole nine. We're going old school as much as we can with the event, and we want to embody all elements of hip hop. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about, you know, the DJing, the b-boying, graffiti writing.
That is the old school hip hop Stop the Violence concert. We are very, very excited about this with MC Light coming in also.
And she's going to perform.
She is performing. She's performing at 11 p.m. We're also having Jasiri X come in and speak, and he's really a progressive artist that speaks about political issues and gun violence and issues throughout the community. And we're also having some students at Thurgood Marshall perform with regard to the five elements of hip hop, and they're going to all tie in the nonviolence theme. So,
God willing, if Zulu Kings could come out, you know, to be there in support of it, I think that would be also a great look as well.
And just to let the listeners know, the Zulu Kings are local breakdance kind of pop lock crew.
Well, they're derived from African men by the Zulu Nation. And the Zulu Kings there's actually the vice president, his name is Taekwon. He's a former student of Wright State, alum of Wright State, and he's a vice president. He's, you know, right here in Dayton. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people that don't know about the B-boy world should know that it's alive and well in Dayton, actually.
And again, Thursday, April 11th at the kickoff rally at Omega Baptist Church, and, of course, the old school concert at Thurgood Marshall kicks off at 8 o'clock. On Friday, April 12th, those tickets are $10 to come here, MC Light. And then the big panel discussion on Saturday, April 13th.
On Saturday, April 13th, also at Thurgood Marshall, this is the conversation piece. We're really encouraging anybody, youth groups, students, to come out, participate. The panel is going to be including MC Light, Jasiri X, and other community leaders. And it's moderated by Bakari Katwana, who is a political analyst, has been featured on CNN, and so we're really excited to have him here and moderate this conversation.
And where is that on Saturday, and what time?
This is also going to be held at Thurgood Marshall High School. Doors open at 10 a.m., and the community panel discussion begins at 11 a.m.
It's been a blast talking with our two guests on Why So Weekend, Bryce Hudson, Assistant Director of Wright State University's Bilingual Black Cultural Center, and Erica Fields, Administrator of Special Projects and Community Relations for the City of Dayton Human Relations Council. It's been fun having you guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
The Speak, Be Heard, Be Considered Hip Hop Conference begins this Thursday, April 11th, and will continue through the weekend. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit hiphopspeak.eventbrite.com. or you can call 937-333-1403. For WYSO Community Voices, this is Basim Blunt.
Actor Anthony Edwards has signed on to take part in next week's presentation of Top Gun 3D at the new Air Force Museum Theater. Edwards, who played the role of Navy Lieutenant Nick Goose Bradshaw in the 1986 Paramount Pictures blockbuster, will co-present the screening of the new 3D version of Top Gun. It's all part of this year's Film Festival of Aviation. This week, I spoke with the festival's founder, Ron Kaplan, to get a rundown on this year's entries.
On Friday, we're going to kick off at 10:30 with The Restorers. Now, this is a television pilot episode for public television, and interesting local connections here, two of them. Number one, the producer, Adam White, is a Wright State Film Department graduate, and he's bringing along his producer, Kara Martinelli. Now, this episode happens to focus on the 68th reunion of the Doolittle Raiders, which was here in Dayton at the Air Force Museum and Urbana, Ohio, back in 2010. So if you were there, you'll find this episode interesting. And if you weren't there, it's a great way to see it from also the perspective of one of the B-25 bombers that was among the 17 that were here. At 1 p.m. on Friday, we're showing the Midwest premiere of First in Flight. And this is a 30-minute feature film that was produced by Tara Tucker, directed by Brandon Hess. They're both going to be here. This was her senior thesis project, along with the crew at the American Film Institute, and they are already talking to major studios about a full-length version based on this very interesting human look at the Wright brothers. At 3:30 that afternoon, we've got a documentary called High Flight and a short one to follow called Uncle Jack. Both are presented by the film's producer, director, John Tennyson. Both are made in partnership with Gary Sinise, the actor, Lieutenant Dan. High Flight follows Gary Sinise as he gets a U-2 ride at Beale Air Force Base. And Uncle Jack is about his uncle who flew B-17s in World War II. And Gary surprised him with a ride in a B-17 a few years ago and documents that interesting event. And then at 6:30 on Friday night, we have the 1927 classic Wings, which was directed by William Wellman. And that was the first movie to ever win a Best Picture Award from the Academy. This has been remastered. It has a new orchestral soundtrack, new sound effects by Ben Burtt, who's an Oscar-winning sound designer. And William Wellman Jr., the son of the director, is going to be here to present it. And Jr. is an authority on his father's career, and particularly the making of this movie, which was an epic blockbuster in its day and still holds up as a fantastic movie. And it's considered the first greatest aviation movie as well.
What do we have coming up on Saturday then?
Saturday morning, we start off at 10 a.m. with Air Racers 3D. Now, this was a movie that was shown in the IMAX format previously, but it's also in a digital format. Christian Frey is its producer, director, writer. This is the first movie ever made about the Reno Air Races in a giant screen format, and it is spectacular. Very colorful sport. It's a great story behind it.
You've got two presentations of Memphis Belle on Saturday, May 13th, and those will be presented by Catherine Weiler, the producer of the second version, I believe. Let's talk a little bit about those.
Well, the first version is the original 1944 documentary, which was produced by William Weiler during the war. Now, he was already a well-known director. The list of his Oscar-winning movies is endless. One of my favorites is Mrs. Miniver. But during the war, he was doing some of this documentary work and actually flew combat missions with B-17s following the crew of the Memphis Belle. And when this movie was screened for the president, President Roosevelt back then, he said, everybody needs to see this. So they took the movie and converted it. It unfortunately was shot in 16 millimeter because their 35 millimeter cameras were sunk by a U-boat. They were on a freighter on the way over. So William Wyler used 16 millimeter and they upgraded it to 35 millimeter. And it was seen in theaters all over the country during the war. So and considered to this day one of the best combat documentaries ever filmed. And Catherine Weiler later in 1990 produces a theatrical action drama called The Memphis Belle, and she's going to show both of them. We're going to do that as separate screenings, but she'll speak to her father's production of the documentary, and then she's going to let us in on how she made the theatrical movie all those years later with a lot of stars in it and kind of gave some of them a big boost in their careers.
Now you've got a final selection on Saturday night. Many folks will be interested in Top Gun 3D.
Yeah, this film, we scheduled two screenings of it because we knew this one was going to sell out. Paramount recently had Top Gun converted into 3D, mainly for a one-week theatrical run to promote the sale of the Blu-ray discs, the 3D Blu-ray discs. Clay Lacy is the aerial cinematographer. He's an enshrinee of the National Aviation Hall of Fame, and he's coming back to speak to the filming of it. Barry Sandrew, PhD, is the founder of Legend 3D. That's the company Paramount partnered with to convert the movie from 35mm to this high-def digital 3D format. He's going to speak to that process because he worked with director Tony Scott, the late Tony Scott, and Jerry Bruckheimer in that process. And then as an added bonus, we just learned recently that Goose is coming to join them for the presentation, and that's actor Anthony Edwards. There's no Maverick without Goose in Top Gun. And he's going to come back and speak to, from his perspective on the filming of the movie. And that's going to be Saturday night at 6:30. And again, we know that one's going to sell out. With all of these, we're suggesting people buy their tickets in advance, and we'll get to that in a minute. But we have a second screening of it to close the festival. And on Sunday at 3:30, it will be presented again by Dr. Sandrew. This time he's going to be joined by retired Navy Captain Hoot Gibson, who is an actual Top Gun fighter school graduate and flew F-4s and F-14s in combat, went on to become a 5-time shuttle astronaut. So we're going to have two interesting perspectives on that second screening as well.
Nice. And you're going to start the day on Sunday at 10 a.m. with a viewing of Steve Canyon. Tell us about that.
Well, this is really neat, especially for older baby boomers, and I don't count myself in that group. I was a little young for this, but back in the late 50s, early 60s, there was a television series based on Milton Caniff's Steve Canyon cartoon strip. And, of course, Milton Caniff, Dayton native, well-known around here. A lot of people don't realize this series existed because back then they were filmed and actually aired in 35mm. So there were several seasons of this, and years ago the Caniff estate, along with a gentleman named John Ellis, who's a producer and a restorer of old films, they went and found all 34 episodes. We're going to screen one of those episodes, and John Ellis is here to do it and speak to the making of this particular episode. They're black and white, but the Air Force cooperated back then. So even in black and white, you're going to see Cold War era aircraft like you've never seen. And it's kind of fun. The plots are interesting, but John is an authority on the Steve Canyon and the Milton Caniff legacy, and especially the making of this TV series. So that's going to be a treat on the giant screen, especially.
Have there been any issues adapting these older formats to the new Air Force Theater?
Yeah, there are some issues, and our audience will see that there's some formatting. You might call it letterboxing. Also, some of our projection is not going to be from the original digital cinema package, as they call it. But yes, audiences will see a little difference from film to film on that in the digital context.
Let's talk about the show holding the middle spot on Sunday.
Well, among the documentaries we're really proud to be showing is one called Honor Flight. And Honor Flight is an organization people may be familiar with. They just recently received the Spirit of Flight Award from the Hall of Fame last December for the work they do in transporting veterans, especially World War II vets, to Washington, D.C. to see their memorial. And it's amazing. It's you might call it an airlift, but it's all volunteer. It's all done with sponsorship. It's an incredible mission. And this documentary, which was produced last year, follows four veterans from the Milwaukee area in particular as the Milwaukee chapter of the Honor Flight organization gets them to Washington and back to visit the memorial. And it's a very moving and emotional film. I say that being the son of a World War II veteran, but I think everybody probably has some relative that was involved in that is a veteran, and to see these gentlemen get to see their memorial that they might not otherwise get to were it not for Honor Flight and the work that their volunteers and pilots do, it's really incredible. We are going to make an announcement. World War II veterans will be able to get in to see this movie for free, but the seating is limited, so We'll make that announcement soon. And I know that the Air Force Museum Theater is committed to showing this film again in the future. I don't know what that schedule will be. But we'll have one of the producers, Camelli Foster, here to speak about the making of the film. And very excited to be able to show it on the giant screen here at the Air Force Museum.
What's the best way people can find out information, take a look at the schedule, and pick and choose the events that they want to attend?
That's very easy. All people need to do is go to airforcemuseum.com. You'll see the Real Stuff link there, and it will have the full schedule. You'll be able to purchase your tickets online. We have also, besides individual tickets, there's full-day passes. The best deal is a full festival pass, which is transferable. If you want, you can also call, and that number is 937-253-4629 to make your reservations by phone if you wish.
I've been speaking with Ron Kaplan, founder and director of the Real Stuff Film Festival of Aviation. You've got a big lineup this year. Good luck with the event. Ron, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on.
That's it for this week's edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at wyso.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks to all of our guests. WYSO is a broadcast service of Antioch University for the Miami Valley. Coming up next, the Book Nook.